Meet Sven.
Yeah.
He's very excited right now. Sven doesn't play poker, but he's still very excited. You see, Sven is a dealer for Porsche, and he's just found out that PokerStars players earn $7.5 million in VIP points every month. And with our all-inclusive program, that's enough to redeem 5 of the lovely pieces of German engineering every day.
Yeah!
Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to leave other schemes, well, out of commission. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast presented by PokerStars. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's April 2nd, 2010, and you're listening to the best PokerCast on the internet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I am a land-based Scott Long.
Glad to be land-based.
Yeah, no sea legs anymore.
Hey, did it affect you at all when you got off the ship?
No,
me neither.
It didn't affect me on the ship or off the ship, but, you know, my wife is hypersensitive to these. You know, every time the ship she thought might have listed one way or the other, she was like, oh, did you feel it? I'm like, oh dear, sorry, I feel. And, you know, really the only time I felt it is, you know, after my fourth Johnny Walker one night. I was like, the equilibrium worked out, so, you know, I was perfect. And I get off the ship, and I didn't feel anything. I don't get this thing that some other people talk about. I mean, thank God I don't get it. But
yeah, Jean got it. When she got off the ship for a couple of days, she was still like, man, I can't. And I'm like, God, it was the Gulf of Mexico. You know, when it was the Atlantic Ocean and the ship was like on its side, that's when I felt it. But really, I haven't felt anything. It was a great cruise for me. I just really enjoyed it and had no after effects at all.
Yes, excellent. Well, we'll talk a lot more about it later on in the show, but of course we missed something very important, Chris.
Yes.
And that was probably, it's actually the first Apes event in history that neither one of us played in.
Yes, pretty sad.
I was at Cozumel, you know, getting tanked. You were wrecking a scooter. And see, now we're totally teasing people. They got to listen to the whole show now. And while we were doing all that, Rice F88 wins not his first banana, Chris, not his second banana, but his third banana.
Man.
Taking down the Pot Limit Omaha event. And, you know, he didn't have a walk in the park, Chris, it sounds like.
Well, I tell you what, though, it sounds like one of the meals I had when I went ashore, rice and bananas. It's like rice and plantains. It was everywhere whenever I was in Cozumel.
But he had to beat Poker Geek MN, another second for Poker Geek.
Wow, that's a monumental task taking that guy down.
No doubt. And then third was Godar. So I mean, a lot of good players there, and Rice came out on top, and he was very excited and actually called us, Chris. We like that.
You gotta like those military men. They come through for you.
Exactly.
Let's hear it.
Hey, we just finished up the Apes PLO event today, and after a long, tough final table, I ended up taking it down for my third banana. It was a tough event, but I wanted to send a shout-out to my heads-up opponent, Poker Geek MN, who yet again made another incredibly deep run in an Apes event. And then also to Goddard, who finished out in third place, and Goddard really put me to the test on a couple of very key hands. I posted one of those up on the Antiup forum. I would be interested in seeing what the rest of the nation thought about the hand. But anyway, as always, keep up the great work on the podcast, and we'll look forward to seeing you at the next Apes event.
Yeah, it's Godar, right?
It's Godar.
We all know that. I mean,
Godar.
Who's ever messed that up before?
Godar.
I mean, it's like not knowing how to say conculate.
Yes, exactly. Come on.
Godar.
Oh, man.
You know, I was really bummed I missed it. I really wanted to play the PLO. And, you know, of course, you know, I have all myself to blame because I play in the cruise and I play in the Apes.
Yep.
I could have coordinated it better, but I didn't. So, but congratulations to everybody who played. And get a little news on the free roll, Chris.
Scott, it's not your fault.
I know. Son, I appreciate that.
Son, it's not your fault. Don't screw with me, man.
Here's the thing. I'm like, you know, like that woman that keeps getting breaking up with a bad guy.
Yeah.
And then dates another bad guy, and then you know doesn't wonders why she never can meet a nice guy. This is how I feel like the free roll. I keep trying. Keep going back, saying, "All right, it's gonna be different this time." And I know I'm gonna get abused by our listeners anyhow. But here's the thing. You know, I noticed a couple days before Wednesday's free roll for the Badoogie event coming up that it wasn't yet up on PokerStars, so I emailed our contact there, and very quickly it was up, which was great. And then he emailed me this morning to say, you know, hey, our programmers noticed when settings up that these free rolls seem to attract an unusually large number of Russian entrants. Do you guys have a big Russian contingent that we don't know about?
Did you say da?
I'm like, yet. And so, of course, I said, no. I mean, these are a lot of the freeloaders and stuff. Well, he's like, you know what? We set up for Wednesdays tonight. We limited it to players in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico to kind of avoid having these crashers in. So I'm like, wow, that is amazing. That is going to make an awful lot of our listeners happy. But, you know, here's the thing. We also have a lot of listeners in the U.K., Australia, and, you know, kind of scattered around. So I kind of asked, you know, hey, I don't know how all this works, but is it possible that we can just ban Russia? You know, I feel like I'm walking in Rocky IV, man.
I must break you.
So I wrote back and like, all right, we're going to let fans in UK and Australia in now. So here is the deal. The next free roll, which will be noon Eastern, April 17th, No Limit Hold'em 6 Max, will be open only to folks in the U.S., Canada, Mexico, UK, and Australia. I'm assuming that means New Zealand, but I don't know. We'll find out.
Wow.
So hopefully that will cut down on an immense number of interlopers and freeloaders. It will not be a perfect fix for this, but it is another step, Chris. I'm dating another bad guy now, and this one's going to be different than the last one.
We're refining, though. We're refining.
And we'll see how that goes. And, of course, you know, great apologies if we have folks in, you know, some countries that are shut out by this. But we will do our best to kind of, you know, get everything working well for everyone. But, you know, everybody, if you got $5, you can enter it.
Can we please have Bangladesh included in this? We have a listener there who drives a cab. Well, you know, we're always doing stuff for our listeners. Of course, our next Apes event is April 7th, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, Badoogie. Are you looking forward to the Badoogie one?
I am. I will be on the road, I just realized, so I'm hoping I can get to a internet connection and play because I really do want to play Badoogie. I really feel like I missed out on the... on the PLO, and, you know, I don't want all my apes this year to be No Limit. Boring. So I'm looking forward to playing Badoogie, so I'm hoping that I can get back to the hotel room in time to play.
I have to admit, I wish Badoogie was No Limit. I really have to admit that. I just get it all in there with a four-card Badoogie and hope it holds up. Well, speaking of doing things for Any Up listeners, here's our nation's chance to do something for one of our listeners.
This is awesome. I love this.
Frank Wilburn from Amarillo, Texas, wrote us and says, about a week or so ago, I decided I wanted to try to get to the World Series. After a long drive on empty Texas Panhandle roads, I remembered reading about a guy who traded one red paperclip for a house.
Yes.
I remember that. He said, I thought I would try to trade one red poker chip for a seat in any of the $1,000 No Limit Hold'em buy-in events at this year's World Series. He started a blog, and the address is quadscracked.com. And he started a group on Facebook, Chip for a Chair. That's a cute name. As you can see, I have used the old phrase chip and a chair, which was mentioned on one of our shows recently. But now he's changed it for his benefit. So far, I have made two trades. I went from one chip to a pair of novelty sunglasses.
Excellent.
And then from those sunglasses to a 1970 Dodge Charger RT diecast model. He says, during all of this, I have been also asked to join PokerJunkie.com as a blogger. So what can we do? You know, at first when he said I got a Dodge Charger RT, I was freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, this guy got a car for sunglasses. And then I saw it was a model. But still, even so, he's working his way.
You're also bummed to hear that I stole that 1970 Dodge Charger model from you and that all these trades have just been between us. No, we're just kidding. But that's great, Frank. And you know, what a great concept here. And I'm sure folks are going to get excited about this and help them out. You know, I'll look around the Antiup office here and see whether we have something that we can trade that's worthy of a diecast car model.
But even so, I think like people look at this like they're trying to help this guy, and if they're willing to sacrifice something just to help him along, they could do it. Like, I mean, we could send this guy an autographed copy of something that's...
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. It's got to be something good enough that he can trade on to somebody else.
Right, that's what I mean. I think that the value of, say, like we have an autographed copy of Antiup from Gavin Smith, you know, or, you know, we have an autographed copy of Antiup from TJ Cloutier. Maybe there's something we could do with that. I don't know. That might get something.
All right. Well, we'll see what the nation says, what we can give them from the nation that they would be willing to trade him something of value for.
Okay, so that's not valuable.
Second level
okay.
thinking. And then we'll try to help him out. Yeah, hey, we also, you know, we have an autographed photo of Layla Kaylee, too.
Yeah, yeah. You're still holding on to that, huh?
Yeah, we got a lot of autographed stuff here.
So we'll see.
Maybe that's what we'll do. But I don't want to give it to him if he's not going to get something good out of it.
No, absolutely. That's what we want to know. We want to know what you're willing to trade for that, so we'll trade it to him, and then you can trade what you want to him. You know, that's what we'll do. Somebody's willing to trade something of value that we think is valuable. We'll give this thing to him and then let it go from there.
Excellent. I like it.
Plus, I want to see that Dodge Charger RT diecast model on your desk. Hey, Scott, did you see we were on TV this week?
Yeah, you know what? Unfortunately, I don't get the network on my DirecTV, but I do get the documentary channel.
That's next.
Yeah. Next, hopefully, we'll get the Bright House Sports Network here. But you watched our show. It was debuted when we were on the cruise, and you said you kind of liked it, right?
I did
like
it.
Because it was you, right?
No. And we weren't on it very much. It was just our voices, you know.
That's good enough.
And it was fun. It was a lot of fun to see everything that we knew was coming together, put together in one nice, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you watch your mom make dinner and she's putting all these ingredients together and you're like, what the hell's that going to be? And then when it's all done, you're like, wow, this is great. It tastes great. Well, let's just say that the Antiup TV show tasted great, man. It was
excellent.
It was pretty cool. I liked it. And there's going to be more, you know, broadcasts of it locally here. And also it's going to be on Cox Cable in Louisiana on April 4th. So on Easter Sunday. So that's coming up.
Yep, and then he's going to be sending us a copy. We will get it on our website at some point, as soon as we get it and figure out the best way to get it up on our website. And, of course, we'll let everybody on the podcast know when that's up, so you can watch it there as well, too.
Very cool. And last night, you and I taught a poker strategy course on Derby Lane, and it was a step further than our Poker 101. We got into some serious strategy, bluffing and pot control and whatever, and that worked out really well. And we're going to have another two more of those in April. On the 15th and the 29th at Derby Lane. So I'd like to see some of our podcast guys come down, because right now it's just random people, and I'd like to see some of our listeners down there.
Yeah, absolutely. I had fun last night. It was a good course.
Me too. 6 p.m. No reason to say Eastern time, because I don't think anyone's going to be driving from another time zone.
Call to the road. Hey, I'm on the way from New Orleans. Hold on.
I'm almost there. Actually, we had a couple of dealers on the boat who came from New Orleans who were driving down, and they're like, wait for me, I'm coming, you know. We had to hold the ship for them. All right, let's see what happened on the Antiup News Desk while we were gone.
Representative Jim McDermott, a Democrat from Washington, has slightly tweaked his federal online poker bill to provide for individual states to receive a 6% deposit fee from players in their states. This comes from Poker News. The bill, which is a companion bill to Representative Barney Frank's bill, is expected to get some action in June.
That's pretty cool. I mean, I think, and we even talked to TJ about something like this, where he played in a poker room where you paid a percentage on your buy-in chips, and then they didn't take a rake from you the rest of the night.
Yeah. Well, that's not quite the thing here. There's still going to be a rake in this bad boy.
No, I know, but if you got to pay the fee.
The idea is to say, hey, states, quit doing this thing on your own. Quit having Florida trying to do one, and Jersey trying to do one, and Iowa do one.
Yeah.
Let's all get behind this one federal one, and you'll still get some money out of it.
Yeah, I mean, if you're going to... I don't think 6%. I mean, you know, obviously we're all spoiled right now.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, if you put $100 online, you have to pay $6 to do it. I guess it's not really that big of a deal.
Yeah.
I guess.
I mean, if it means getting it done, I mean, that's what we're gonna do. We're gonna have to compromise.
Yeah. I mean, if the whole country now is gonna be regulated and it works, I'll make that sacrifice, I guess. But then again, I don't want to be putting $1,000 online and paying $60. I guess that's kind of exorbitant, but. All right. Online poker phenom Isildur One has agreed to appear on Party Poker's Big Game 4 this month in London. though whether that means the identity of the player will be finally revealed is still unknown. Our own Tony G, who helped broker the appearance, says the player may don a mask for the show.
Wouldn't that be great?
That would be awesome.
It's like the new Batman. Who is that Cape Crusader?
They pull it off and it's, you know, Michael Keaton or something, you know, playing the game.
I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for you meddling kids.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
I don't know how serious this whole mask thing is. I think they might just be funning around. But yeah, great. I mean, this is, you know, a big show over in Europe. And to finally see this guy come out from the shadows, even if he's got a mask on, will be exciting.
That would be hilarious if he put a mask on, because everybody would be speculating who it is then instead, you know, I mean, seeing him. And that is
maybe
pretty
cool. Play a game, immediately move him from Party Poker's Big Game 4 to Who Am I?
Yeah, Who Am I?
Yeah.
20 questions.
All right, and then finally, speaking of high-stakes TV poker games, our great sponsor, PokerStars, is launching a new show that gives one online qualifier a $100,000 stake to play against five PokerStars pros who will be using their own money. The qualifier gets to keep any profits he or she makes during the big game, which will air on Fox.
Very cool.
$100,000.
And don't be surprised if, you know, someone named AJ Benza is hosting that show.
Ah, that'd be great.
I would not be shocked if that happened.
I wonder the first time some guy goes all in with his first 100,000 and busts out, how they try to salvage that.
Yeah. All right, so we're going to sit around and watch the rest of the pros play.
Yeah, can you put me on the 1-2 list, please? Thanks.
All right, well, one of the things that happens when you're on a ship is you can't get any phone calls. So we were surprised when we came back. We had a ton of hotline phone number calls, so we're pretty excited about it. The hotline is 813-448-1120. This one comes from Adam from Michigan.
I'm calling to ask you a question about home games. A buddy of mine and I were playing at a local card room, and we met some guys, and they invited us to play in their local home game. We want to go and play in this game, but we want to make sure we're not going to get cheated. What do you guys look for when you're going to go play in a new home game, you know, as far as people that are dealing and team play? Any advice you could give, I'd really appreciate. Thanks for doing the show. Really enjoy it. Keep up the good work.
All right, Scott, I've given this some thought. I appreciate
when you actually think about the show.
Yeah, most of the stuff we do on Annie Up is off the top of our head. But this one I felt like I needed to really think about it a little bit. And if you're going to join a new game and you've never been in that game before, there's some things you should probably insist on, or at least suggest, don't insist, as I say on The Godfather. you know, make sure there's a cut card in the game, so nobody's flashing the bottom card to their buddy. Insist on the cards being cut, and, you know, insist that they draw on seats, too, you know, so that way you know that the buddies aren't sitting next to each other, you know, that you draw for random seatings and stuff. The other thing I thought of was maybe buying in for a smaller amount the first time you're there, especially if it's a cash game,
right?
Until you get a real feel for the players and the integrity of the game. And if you're a winner at the end of the night, and if you're a real good winner, I think that there's a good chance you're not being cheated, unless they're just setting you up for the next time you show up. But really, and then, you know, watch for two players entering the pot all the time together and raising and re-raising when there's a third player in the pot. And then once they force that person out, watch them again, and if they start to play passive after that, it might be a little fishy. You might want to consider getting out of that game. So those are just some things I thought of for testing a game for cheats.
Yeah, I would also, you know, it's kind of tough to do background checks on folks before you get in, but, it, you know, I'd be kind of interested in how you heard about this game.
Yeah.
And, you know, who's playing it and how many people you know in it. I mean, if you are the only one that you know in this game, that's a little scarier than, you know, if it's, hey, it's a friend of a friend. You know, or somebody can vouch for him or something like that. So, you know, I guess we're blessed here, Chris. I mean, we don't have great poker yet in Florida,
right?
Hopefully in a couple months, but we do have good enough that we don't have to play home games here. Now, obviously, the Annie Up folks do because we want to play some other stuff, but it's tough for Adam. You know, he can't go anywhere where, you know, he can play a real legal game and not worry about it. So,
yeah, because he could probably make it to the Indiana Harrah's, right? I mean, if it's not that big of a ride, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know where in Michigan he actually is. He got to, you know, Detroit, and so anyway, it could make sense. But, you know, he wants to play a home game, and, you know, it's a good question.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what else I would tell him is he could take this great set of J Design playing cards from ClassicPlayingCards.com, the official playing cards of Annie Up, that we're going to send him, Chris.
Yes.
And he could take it to the game all wrapped.
Yes.
And say, hey, let's use these.
Yes.
Then you know the deck is not set or marked or anything like that.
Great idea, man. That's a great idea.
That's probably another thing, too, is to kind of look at the cards, too, when they come out and just be sure that nothing's marked or anything. And if you see anything, mention it and see what the response is. It's like, who cares? Then you know you're probably in a game you don't want to be in.
Or you could pick up that book, 52 Ways to Cheat at Poker.
Memorize it all and then go, aha! You're doing page 14!
I did a review of that book a while ago. You can see it online now at AnnieUpMagazine.com and try to pick up a copy of that. It's real cheap. And he'll probably cover everything you could possibly wonder about home games.
All right, we got a mailbag here, too. Do you want to read it or you want me to read it?
I'll read it. You answer it. How's that?
Okay. You take the easy job, as always.
Wait, I just did the heavy lifting on the last hotline.
Carry you through the show.
I just did the heavy lifting. All right, this comes from Greg Hill in Longwood, Colorado. Why is there not a site or tables on existing sites that allow you to play anonymously? He was listening to another podcast. All right, that's it. That's the end of the letter right there. I'm not
reading
it. Come
on.
All right.
You got to listen to the other podcast so you know how much to appreciate Annie Up.
He was listening about heads up play and how players will just sit and wait for fish and not play each other. This would not be an issue if you didn't know who you were sitting with. You just use your poker skills to figure out how they play and adjust your game during the match. I'm a micro stakes player who plays recreationally. I play enough that even at the stakes I play, I'm sure there are some players that probably have some pretty good notes on me. Having the option or ability to play as a complete unknown, I think, would be an advantage for recreational players. And isn't it the recreational player that sites are trying to get back in the game?
All right, Greg. Well, I agree with you on your last point. Certainly, poker rooms want to get those recreational players in. I guess I'll go and say that I don't know exactly why this wouldn't work, but I would surmise that there's so much distrust over the online poker experience as it is that if you allowed people to hide themselves, I think it would be kind of a windstorm of complaints over not knowing who you're playing and being able to track how all the kind of the safety features that most of the big sites like PokerStars have. And then I guess in the other thing too is if you walk in a live casino, you know who you're playing against.
Yeah.
And just because they don't have any notes written down doesn't mean that they haven't remembered you. So it's kind of part of the game of poker, too, and I don't fault these heads-up players for sitting there waiting for fish. I mean, that's, it's a dog-eat-dog or fish-eat-fish world out there, right?
Yeah. Now, he's advocating, like, when you sit down, it just has a random number or just no name at all, just your money stack, so that you don't know who you're playing against, right? He's not saying that you can't keep notes on people, right? Because obviously you'd be able to just write down your own notes if you didn't have this.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can write down notes, but you wouldn't know who you're writing down notes for. I mean,
right, exactly.
John 16:37 instead of off deadline, it's not going to do you any good to write notes because you're never going to see that person again.
Yeah.
With that name.
Yeah.
I understand the concept, and I really get it. I just think it's probably a security thing.
Absolutely. It has to be. I mean, plus multi-accounts and all this other, collusional things that you can imagine. So that's the real reason why. And
imagine if this was like on UB a couple years ago when they had their big thing, and Russ Hamilton was able to, or whoever else was involved in this was able to completely hide who they were at all times.
Yeah,
that's easy it would be to perpetrate fraud in that scenario if you were on the inside of these things. So
yeah, absolutely.
I don't think any legitimate site these days would ever entertain something like that out of fear that people would falsely or even correctly accuse him of doing something.
Good point. Very good point.
All right. Well, Greg, it's not all bad news for you. We're going to send you a $10 staking package from GetAStake.com. That'll help your micro stakes. You may not want to play it heads up if you're worried about getting a shark eating you. But our good friend Craig at Get a Steak has upped the ante, Chris.
Wow.
Turned like our name around there.
I like to do a little brand awareness there.
Yep, up the ante. And for all the folks that have won the Get a Steak package in March and everyone that will win in April, he's going to see the swag winner who completes their steak by the last day of April with the highest profit is going to get a $50 steak for May.
Cool.
So we're giving you $10 right now, and you can roll that into $50. Of course, if you roll it into $50, that means that you've done well in your steak anyhow, so you made a lot more money anyhow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That's very cool.
Hey, we appreciate that from Craig. And, you know, email us at podcast@nammagazine.com with your mailbag, and you too might get a chance to win that great swag.
Greetings, this is Columbo from PokerWannabe.blogspot.com, and this is another 1 Minute Mystery. The Case of the Amateur Stud. We're in the first hour of a major MTT, and it folds around to the cutoff who limps. I look down at the button, a Queen of Clubs, Queen of Diamonds. And early or not, this is too big of a hand not to play aggressively. So I raise it to 4x big blind. The small blind folds, the big blind calls, and the limper calls. Not so unexpected.
I'm a creature of habit, sir.
Pot is 850, and the three of us see a flop of 6 of clubs, 2 of clubs, 4 of spades. Check, check, and I'm going to bet 2/3 the pot, which is about 500. The big blind is going to call, and the original limper is going to fold.
Is far from over.
The turn comes to 10 of diamonds. The big blind again checks. This time I bet 1,500, and after a small delay, calls again. The river's the ace of hearts, and the big blind takes a small delay and then shoves his entire stack in. So, what's your read, and what's your action?
Remember, Sven, our friendly Poker Stars Porsche dealer? Sven's still very excited.
Yeah!
He already knows that Poker Stars players together earn enough VIP points to redeem 5 Porsches every day. What's made him a little more excited is the fact that 5 of our Poker Stars players have already claimed these lovely pieces of German engineering. Keep Sven happy. Visit PokerStars.com/VIP to find out why our rewards program seems to have left all the other schemes, well, stuck in neutral. PokerStars VIP Club, the best online poker reward program.
All right, we talked about how much fun we had on the cruise, Chris, and now we got to give folks all the details on all that fun.
I'm so excited to talk about this. This is like the first time I actually enjoyed myself on a cruise. I have to admit.
My wife had a good time, too, and she's never been a big cruise fan either. But it was a great our second cruise, very successful.
Yes.
And looking forward to doing future ones. We'll figure that details out later. But, you know, I would love to do one of these once a month if I thought it was feasible. Let us have a great time. We come on. Jody and Cassie, our poker room managers, they came back this time. They did a wonderful job. Brought back almost a whole new crew of dealers that were just as good as the folks from the first one. I mean, we ran into some kind of scheduling with some of the big tournaments around the country, so some of the first dealers couldn't make it back. But they brought it back. We had a great time. And, Chris, this room we had was just phenomenal this time.
It was. It was beautiful. It was nice to look at. It was spacious. We had televisions showing the final – not the final four, but the March Madness.
Yep.
It was just really awesome. And I loved how much room there was. There was no chairs hitting other chairs, and it was just really comfortable. And the air conditioning was set for each individual room instead of there being no air conditioning at all, like the last ship.
I really feel bad for I know probably only one or two of our podcast listeners came on the last cruise, but I feel bad for you guys that if you came on that one, didn't come on this one, because this experience was far superior to the last one. And we had a good time in the first one, too. So.
And I don't know about you, but I was disappointed there wasn't a really large subwoofer next to the wall.
Yeah, it was.
Pounding
it was
at night.
Quiet. All we could hear is the chips and the excitement of the poker game and, of course, the NCAA playing on the TV. And couldn't get our Lady Gaga fix at 2:30 in the morning.
Oh, man. And, you know, another thing they had during the week, too, we had a lot of great tournaments. I wasn't expecting to have that many people show up for them, and it was great. We had some free rolls and late-night tournaments that were just $30, so people could show up and play within a budget. It was a great time.
Yeah, we really did a good job of kind of hitting all the marks here. I mean, we had great tournaments for folks that just wanted to come on and play. You know, we didn't bring big bait rolls. And, of course, we had bigger tournaments. I mean, the main event was $350 this time. $17,000 prize pool.
That's huge.
Generated on a cruise ship. That's awesome.
Yeah, I couldn't believe how many people showed up and played in that thing. And, we gave away a few seats, too, because we did a free roll with some rebuys twice during the week. Generated 14 seats out of that. So, I mean, it was just a great, great experience all around.
And then the team tournament, too. I mean, the first cruise we did, the four-person team, I still like that a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Still do that modified version of it at Tampa Bay Downs every month, and that one's coming up on April 20th this month. But we did a two-person this time, and instead of kind of a heads-up bracket and all that, we just shared the stacks.
Yep. Every blind level, we tagged out.
Yep.
Sort of like the WWE. And we made the final table again, too.
Yeah. We did not win, though, of course. I flamed out at the end. Thought I was getting my money in good. I don't think I did, though, right?
No matter what you did, you were losing your stack there.
That's right. But it was fun because, you know, we tagged off, and then you were all excited because we were at the same table with TJ and his teammate, who we chose at random from the folks that attended TJ's class.
Yes.
So that was great. You know, these players had just soaked up all the knowledge from TJ, got to be his teammate in the tournament.
Yep.
And he loved it. The winner loved it. And they were at our table, and you got TJ. I got the class attendee, and you were pretty excited about that. I know you wanted to play against.
I was, and I sort of felt guilty because I sort of manipulated you in it. I was like, Scott, why? I went over to TJ, and I'm like, TJ, when are you going? And he's like, I'm going second. All right, hey Scott,
you want to go first?
Why don't you go first? I'll go change because it was that, you know, night where we had to wear our tux and everything or whatever. So I was like, I'm gonna go change. You go first, and you can go change. You're like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then I'm like, yes, I'm gonna play TJ. I totally manipulated you.
And you know, in poker, how you're trying to sniff out a bluff. You're like, you know, something doesn't smell right here. Smell a rat. So when Chris comes in, hey, Scott, well, do you want to go first? I'm like, really, Chris? I mean, I have no problems admitting that you're the better No Limit tournament player. I mean, you should go first. I mean, it's like, you know, having your high on base guy batting ninth instead of first. It doesn't make sense to me. But I'm like, so I didn't think something was right there, but I couldn't quite figure it out. And I'm like, I don't care, whatever, Chris. You know, I'm not gonna fight with you on this. So now I know the truth. You sacrificed our team's success in order just to play against TJ.
No way, man. I totally trusted you to handle a small stack. You're the better. Because what you didn't tell the people yet was we didn't want anybody getting ticked off that if the first player went all in and lost, that they would have lost their buy-in, not even had a chance to see a hand. So we had a little red chip, and you got half your stack up front, and then you can cash in that other chip when the other player came in. Or if you had to, you can cash it when you were if you lost your first stack, but at least you'd have a chance to survive and let your other player play. So I was thinking that you were going to have a shorter stack, too, and you're a better short stack player than I am. So I thought, for sure, that'd be the way to go. And then when I sat down, I thought I had to put in the chip to make it a bigger stack. So that was part of my thinking as well, but yeah, most of it was, you know, maybe there's a chance that TJ and us would be on the same table. And it turned out that way. We were at the same table with them twice, so it was kind of cool. And I did take a pot off him, so that was good, too. Well, I lost
one.
Take
a pot off him.
Yeah, I took one on the second table, but lost one on the first. So it was cool. And the one I won was bigger than the one I lost, so I was pretty excited about it.
Positive EV against the legend, then.
Yeah, and I know I'll never sit down at a table with him again, probably, so I can take that to the grave.
Yeah, I got to play with him in the 350, too. He moved to our table. We were down to the last two tables and got to play with him quite a while. I don't think I ever got in a pot with him. I was purposely avoiding them. But you know what, Chris? I couldn't sniff out why you wanted to be first in the team tournament. But my nose was working better on Sunday at the 350 because, you know, we just went through this great class with TJ, and he talked about, you know, this standard strategy. If you're first in the pot, you need to be raising.
Yeah.
Don't be limping. Yeah. Come in for a raise.
Yeah.
All right? So we're at the 350. He's under the gun. He just limps. And I'm like, antennas go all the way up, you know, the ship is off course now because I'm sucking all their antenna power. And I'm like, you know what? that seems fishy. So, like, unless I have three aces, I'm folding. And, of course, I didn't have it even one ace, so I folded. But then I started watching around, and, like, he got two or three other callers, and I went, sucker, sucker, sucker. Because I just felt that he had something big there, that this wasn't a play that I think he would make. So, of course, the flop came, like, jack, jack, deuce, or no, it had six, six, something like that. And, I, of course, I had a six that I folded. And he made a bet, and everybody folded, and he showed pocket aces.
Sweet.
He made a comment about, yep, I was messing around there. I could have lost my whole stack. And I wanted to say, yes, you could have. You don't limp with aces. But I was happy that I sniffed it out.
Well, you know what? You could have yelled at him because he yelled at you.
Yes, that's right.
That was a great moment, man. So we go to TJ's course because I'm covering it for the magazine. I'm taking photos and stuff. And, of course, we just wanted to be in there as well. I mean, you know, we're running this thing. We might as well absorb some of the knowledge. And, you know, like,
about, and, you know, so we, they needed dealers.
It gets there. Yeah. It's like, okay, we want to do some live labs in here. And they didn't have any dealers. So they're like, Chris Scott, get over here and deal. So I'm like, all right, that's cool. You know, I'll control the action and whatever or not. And then all
get
of a sudden,
the box.
Get in the box. Not even like one hand in, I hear like TJ yelling at Scott. I was like, what the hell's going on over there?
He's like, don't you put out that flop one card at a time, Scott. I'm sorry, Mr. Cloutier. My first time dealing, you know, outside of a home game.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I got one of the class participants, great guy, and, you know, he's a dealer, and he's like, hey, Scott, I'll show you how to deal later on if you want. I'm like, come on! I'm not getting paid for this. I'm just giving you cards.
Oh, man. So, of course, I used that knowledge later when he came to mine. I was like, one, two, three, and then turn him over like a real, you know. I was like, see, TJ, I know how to deal. That was classic, man.
But it was absolutely great having TJ on. He was the stories this guy told, Chris.
He had a story for everything.
We were lucky enough to obviously have him at dinner every night. And, you know, he's not one of these guys where you have to ask a lot and pull stuff out of him.
Right.
I mean, he just starts talking and he keeps going. And it's not boring stuff. It's great stuff. And then I know, you know, when he sat down at tables, people just lit up when he was at their table. And, you know, like you did. And, you know, the tournaments, you could see he was telling stories and people were just, like, transfixed on him during the tournament. So that was great. And he was very gracious with his time. You know, shot photos, signed autographs. And folks outside the poker room on the ship were recognizing him.
Yeah, he said in Cozumel people recognize him.
That's great. I mean, of course, he's twice as big as anybody in Cozumel. So
that's true.
Probably just thought he was Manu Bol or something.
He had so many stories, and the funniest line of the week, he's talking about when he was younger, and, you know, he thought that he couldn't be beat up by anybody, and right. he said, I was so naive, he said, I thought that if I got into a fight with God, it'd be a toss-up. I mean, he was hilarious. Every time he told a story, he had, like, a funny punchline, and it was just, you know, I often wonder when I'm his age if I'm going to have stories. I just don't think I'm going to have stories. I just don't.
Yeah, I know.
Maybe I will, but he had a story for everything, and every story he told was poignant. I mean, it had something to do with the lesson he was teaching in the course or the hand at the tournament or even at dinner. It was just incredible.
Absolutely great. And, you know, of course, you know, people are going to ask, did he play craps? Yes, he did.
Yep.
People are going to ask Scott, did you play craps with him? Yes, I did.
People are going to ask Chris, did you sit back and watch like a wuss? Yes, I did. I don't even understand the game. And this man knows the game, and you have to explain it because I can't even explain it, obviously. But he knows the game inside and out. He's telling the dealers what to do. It was remarkable.
It was hilarious. I mean, I don't want to say it was a highlight because there's all kinds of other highlights from this cruise, even stuff that didn't involve TJ. But, you know, I walked through the casino one night, and there he was at the craps table, and there was a spot right next to him. And I'm like, whoosh, whipped out a couple hundred bills, $100, dropping them on the table, and you were like, are you going to play? And I'm like, heck yeah, I'm going to play. and just watching him play, I mean, obviously he's playing for bigger money than I did, but he was doing a lot of the buy bets and place bets, and they were always screwing up the change, and he wasn't letting them get by with it. He's like, no, you give me 75, I flop you back too. And, you know, and there's a couple really good dealers that saw, but most of them were kind of flailing around, but listening to them. But the funniest thing about all this is, unfortunately, it was a cold table, and a couple of our other players were, poker players were there playing, and I don't think any of us won any money. But as soon as, TJ walks away, the dealers start talking about, because they all knew him.
Yeah.
And except one, he's like, should I know him? And they're like, yes, that's TJ. He's from TV. Oh, oh. on poker? He's on TV? And they're like, yes. He's like, oh, that's great. But all the dealers knew him except for that one. And it was kind of fun to actually see him not only in the poker environment but also the craps environment.
You know, and he always says one of the famous sayings for him is he always says if he's at the table and if a wing fell off of a gnat at the corner of the table, he'd see it because he's so – and he's absolutely right, though. I mean, there were a bunch of times during the week where, like, I'd be having a conversation quietly 15 feet from him, and he'd get up out of his seat, turn around, come over to me and say something about it, and then get back in his seat or – you know. And I was like, oh, my God, dude. He's got, like, the biggest ears ever. But I mean that, like, as in, like, hearing, not as in size. It was just incredible. He never misses anything, and he's in his 70s. Absolutely amazing, this guy. And when he was doing the craps, he was not only making sure that he got the right change, but he was making sure you got the right change.
Yes, that's right.
He was keeping track of everybody's bets.
Yep. He's like, hey, you own five. I'm like, oh, thanks, TJ. Give me my nickel.
Unbelievable. That was a lot of fun. And he was great. He was real gracious with his time. He was signing photos, you know, magazines and posing for photos and just everything.
Yeah, and of course he brought on his lovely wife, Joy. She was just a peach to have dinner with, too. And, you know, because she doesn't play poker, doesn't know anything about it. He'll remind you like four times during the cruise. She doesn't know anything about poker.
I know.
But a fascinating woman in her own right, and we really enjoyed having her on. I think she had a good time, too. So that was great. And we had some other great guests, too, Chris. Jason from J Design. He's a repeat sailor with us, came back this time, brought all of his cards. It was good to hang out with him, and he was at the table with TJ for a while, too. He ended up cashing in the main event, I think, right?
No.
Oh, no, he got close.
He went out. It was either the bubble or just before the bubble. Made a great run, but ran into, I think, a bigger hand, and then just didn't catch up.
Sorry, Jason, didn't mean to.
But he did really well, and you know, it was. I always like seeing the people that, you know, are associated with us or our friends do well, because I like to live vicariously through them, you know, because I know I can never do well there, so.
Yeah. You know, one of our good friends that made our whole radio station where we do the podcast when we're not on Skype possible for us, he chopped the main event tournament three ways.
Yep, chopped it three ways. I was very happy for him. It was his biggest cash of his life, and he played really well. He stayed calm throughout the whole thing, and when it got to three-handed, they agreed on a deal and chopped it evenly, and there you go. He finished third as far as official for the points for any up player of the year race, but I'm sure he's ecstatic with finishing third and getting that money.
Not bad. And then we had you know, some folks all around the continent who became instant fans of us. You know, I had this great woman from Ohio that called me up about 2 months before the cruise and said, "Hey, I'm really interested in this. You got to tell me more about it." And I was on the phone for a half an hour with her and her husband answering other questions, and then all kinds of follow-up emails. She kept thinking she's bugging me. I'm like, no, ma'am, you're a customer. I want you to come on and have fun.
Yeah.
And she just had an amazing time. All of her friends from Ohio, of course, you know, always like making Ohio folks feel welcome with
right.
the Ante Up.
Of course.
And she wrote us back, hey, we're going to be on the next one. And, you know, same with some guys I've been corresponding with in North Carolina that wanted to come on the last one, and they came on this one. He's like, my phone's been ringing off the hook with people, and you're going to have a lot of people from Charlotte on the next boat. So that was great. And then we had some folks from Canada. Montreal.
I guess maybe
they saw me when I was up there, and of course not. But, you know, like, hey, we'll come on the I think actually they Googled Poker Cruise.
Which is cool.
And ours came up, and that's how they came on, and they had a great time. So, you know, it's great. I mean, we had a lot of Florida players, but a lot of players from around the country and other countries, too, and just had a great time hanging out with everyone.
And one of the reasons we got on the ship, other than poker, was to go to Cozumel, some, you know, tropical paradise or whatever, and see some cool things. And, you know, last time I didn't get off the ship because I'd been to Cozumel couple of times before, but this time I like to think there were two Chris's on this cruise. There's the old Chris and the new Chris, and the new Chris was the one who, you know, had fun and got off the ship and bought Gene a gift in the gift shop, and you know, and then the old Chris woke up halfway through the trip when he was in Cozumel already and said, "What the hell am I doing?
Don't leave without me, Chip."
And of course, as you alluded to earlier in the show, Gene and I are going to be going back to Cozumel yet again with the family in January. And so we wanted to go sort of scope out what some of the things were to do out there and maybe see if we could find a deal on our own without having to go through the cruise ship and pay a little extra. And so we said, all right, let's go. So we go out there, we start walking around. It's hot. I'm getting sunburned. And we were like, you know what, let's just rent a taxi, you know, get a taxi or whatever. And when we get there, the guy's like, well, what about a scooter? Why don't you rent a scooter? And now I'm like, you know, my mom told me not to get off the ship. You know, now here I am. You know, we don't have the greatest insurance in the world. But he's like, oh, I said, how much is it? He's like, $40. And I was like, what's a cab going to cost? And he's like, well, a cab will probably be like $25, maybe 30. Or I'm like, well, I don't know. Let's just go back to the ship. You know, old Chris is trying to take over. But then the guy says, all right, $30. And new Chris goes, all right, let's take a scooter.
What's the worst thing that could happen?
What's the worst thing that could... And then, you know, I'm like, hey, you know what? You know, my wife and I, two people on a scooter, and I've never ridden a scooter in my life. No problem, right? I can control it. So we walk like a half a mile to the scooter place, agree to everything the guy says. I probably signed over my kidneys. I don't even know. We get on the scooter, and Gene's like, no, wait. You go first and make sure you can drive this thing before I get my ass on this. I said, okay. So immediately I almost get killed in oncoming traffic because as I was trying this, it's like a wave runner where you're steering, but you're also controlling the gas with what you're steering. And I was like, oh, my God, I went right in the traffic and I got my feet dragging on the ground. The guy's like, put your feet up. I'm like, oh, my God, am I that stupid? I mean, I used to ride like a moped when I was younger. So I get in the traffic, and I'm freaking out. Well, by the time I get back to the station, I'm okay. So Gene gets on. We get in the traffic. We're going. Everything's cool. Then the wind picks up, okay? And you can't hear anything when you have a helmet on, and the wind is blowing, right? All of a sudden, like, these cars are passing us, and it's a one-lane road, but they're passing us anyway. And they're scaring the bejesus out of me because I can't see the rearview mirrors because for Gene to sit on the back with me, I got to scoot up a little bit. Every time a car passed, I had a heart attack. We get to the place that we want to go to, and I park the thing, and I can't get the seat to lift up to put the helmets in. So we had to, like, disguise our helmets, like, with the scooter so that nobody – it was, like, camouflage. Nobody could see them, so they would steal our helmets because I didn't want to be responsible for them. So every, like, 300 yards, there's, like, a speed bump, which almost throws us off the thing every time we go over it, you know. But, you know, our combined weight, it made it impossible to take sharp turns. I try to do a U-turn in the road, and I end up driving into the shrubbery in the woods. Prickers and stuff are scratching my arms. My helmet gets all disheveled because it catches a branch. And I'm like, are you all right back there, hon? You know, she's like, you take some wide turns, she says. Hon, I don't want to dump it in Mexico. And that's when old Chris took over. Old Chris said, we're going back to the ship right now, and we're going to look things up on the internet. So I basically crawled back, you know, like the slowest speed possible, got back to the guy, and he's like, hey, compadre, you're only gone like 15 minutes. You got this thing till 6 o'clock tonight. I'm like, no, you have this thing till 6 o'clock at night. You can have it. I dumped $40 for no reason and walked back to the ship and just sulked, man. I was like, oh, but it was fun and stuff. And we got to see two of the places we wanted to see, but literally I was back within a half an hour, even though I had it booked for like 6 hours.
That's great.
I almost died, man.
Well, we were not as adventurous as you are. We got off the boat, and you know, our good friend Dr. Frank writes our Healthy Metcom, overheard us on the podcast last week talking about the tequila tasting tour.
Right.
And he's like, oh, I got to join you on that. Do you mind? I'm like, no, more the merrier. So we got off and we decided we were just going to – there's lots of them on this island. We're just going to get into a cab and say, take us to one. We'll let him decide which one it is. And so we get off and we said, hey, we're going to tequila tour. The guy goes, oh, yes, I can handle it. I can help you with that. It'll be $60 a person. And we're like, say what? And I didn't know how to say what in Spanish. So I just went, say what? And that was just a cab. We still had to pay to get in the tequila tasting. And I'm like, oh, thanks, buddy. No problem. We'll get in the cab. Because I couldn't tell if this guy's a tour guy or a cab. And so I started looking around for a cab. And he's like, oh, come on. Let's talk. What can we do? And so we kept going. I'm like, you know what? You know what I want to do is I want to go to the ruins, too. I mean, not the good ones like in Tulum, obviously. But there's some on there. I want to do something more than a tequila tasting. Because when I told Lord at the beginning, I'm like, you know what do I really want to do? I just want to get off and get a private driver and just drive us around the island.
Yeah.
But I didn't know how much that was going to cost and stuff. So we worked out a deal. I'm like, you know, hey, you take us to the Tequila Tasting. You take us to the ruins. And he's like, all right, you figured out that's 3 hours, you know. We kept talking back and forth. I kept walking away because that's what you got to do. And so we talked this guy down from $180 to $60.
Wow.
Felt like I won the lottery.
He would have done it all for 20.
Yeah, I'm sure the normal cost would have been 40. So this guy was like, yay! 20 more bucks from stupid Americans. But we had a great driver, Francisco, which happens to be Frank's name, too. And, you know, they got along well. It took us to ruins, which were not very exciting. Tequila tasting, awesome.
Yeah.
We were lit after that. And then drove around for a while. And, man, just had a great time. And I got to mention how great Dr. Frank has been for Auntie Up. And, of course, he writes these great columns for us for free. He comes on the show. Every time he's in a room, he's talking us up. And not only that, but we needed somebody to pick TJ and Joey up from the airport and get them to the ship and then get them back from the ship back to the airport. He was Johnny on the spot with that. They actually loved him. And so I think Frank is our early favorite for Auntie Up National of the Year to kind of take the mantle from Chicago Joe, who held it so well last year.
I have to agree, and it's going to be pretty hard to pass him. I mean, he's doing so much for us these days, and we just so appreciate it. And man, and you know, he got. I'm sure he enjoyed picking up TJ, and it was sort of a. He's always, because he's a big Raz player too. You know, what I mean, he loves Raz, and TJ won a Raz bracelet. You know, so I'm sure he was one of his idols, and just totally enjoyed it. And they talked a lot about a lot of different stuff. I'm sure medical things came up as well during the conversations.
Yes, no doubt.
That was one thing too during dinner. I know the first day, it's like, TJ, what was it like to be in the World Series? And, oh, that great hand against Howard Lederer in the Raz final. And, oh, and you've won so many tournaments. And then by the last day, it's like TJ's talking to Frank about, you know, like, I got this bad knee and I got diabetes and, you know, whatever you're saying. I'm like, oh, my God, look how far the conversations dropped from day one. It was remarkable.
Well, we had an amazing time, and such an amazing time that we're going to do yet another one. We're going to keep rolling these out, so we'll stay tuned to the podcast. We will bore you to tears with constant weekly reminders of all that once we set it up. But we're looking for maybe, possibly doing the next one out of South Florida.
Yep.
Or something different. We've kind of conquered Cozumel, I think, you know, between the scooter and the tequila tasting. And maybe even doing a longer one, make it a true vacation. So stay tuned. We'll have details as soon as we get them all ironed out here, and hopefully we'll have some more podcast listeners on the next one.
This is Justin Bonomo, and you're listening to Auntie Up.
I am going to give you a rare treat.
A rare treat, eh?
Yeah. Your vacation is going to be extended by one day.
Wow.
I'm going to do the hand of the week for you.
Are you? Great.
Yes. Now, I reserve telling you all the details of this hand just because I want to see how you would react and how you would play this hand. And then, you know, and we'll see how it goes. How's that
all
sound?
Right. Sounds wonderful. Do you have
okay.
Any tequila?
I think you still have a little bit of that in you, by the way. I didn't bring up the night where you came over to my table sloshing words. I wanted to try to protect the integrity, but you got it out of me anyway. It was pretty remarkable. But I enjoyed it nonetheless. I loved when you said your name. It was like, I'm Scott Long. I'm like, oh my God. Okay, so we'll get going with this. I was at a 1-3 no limit game. And it was shorthanded for a long time, and everybody was a nit at this table. Even I was, really, because dinner was coming up, and I was just keeping the table going because I didn't want it to break because they wanted to play. And I was about, I don't know, at about 180 at one point, and then I took down a nice $8 pot from somebody. I felted them and got to about 260. And at that moment, the other 1-3 table broke, and that table was loose. And it actually had Faso at that table, who had about, I would say, about 150 in front of maybe 130. And then there were two or three other players at that table who had like 800 in chips. It was,
wow.
These guys were normally 2-5 players, but there wasn't a 2-5 game going. So they're in the 1-3 game. And when that table broke, it brought them over to our table. So now the game was, instead of 1-3 nits, it was 2-5 gambles. You know what I mean? So, you know, you had to be prepared for that. All of them sat on my right except for Faso. Faso was across from me in the 10 seat. And about three or four hands in, now I've got like 260 in front of me. And about three or four hands in, I pick up pocket queens. So I'm under the gun. Yeah, and I'm under the gun. So what do you do, Scott, with pocket queens here?
Fold.
Okay. Do I get, like, some swag?
Yeah, we'll get some swag. And thank you. I'm Scott Long. You're Chris Cosenza. We'll see you next week. No, I don't fold. But I don't like, I love getting queens, but I don't like them in that position. So, but, you know, you can't play them passively. So I would I'd put in a raise.
And it's a 1-3 game. So what do you make it?
Oh, let's see. Well, you got some crazy players in there. Not crazy. That's the wrong word, I should probably say. But, players like to play bigger.
Yeah.
They probably don't know you enough that they picked up the betting patterns yet. So, I don't know. I'm probably making it 15, maybe even. 20 is probably too much. I'll say 15.
That's exactly what I made it.
Wow, really?
15 smackers. So, all of the nits fold.
And I put all $1 chips in, too, by the way.
Now, our $5 chips are purple, so I put 3 purples in.
All right, 3 purples.
And it folds around the Faso. He gets out of the way, and all the other nits got out of the way. So the button, who is one of these new players who has about 800 in front of him, calls. The small blind, who was a loose player, and he was actually at my table. He didn't come from the other table,
okay. But
he had to rebuy like 4 or 5 times. He continually rebought and then would build a stack and then it would come down and he'd rebuy. And he had about 250 in front of him or so. He calls. And now the other real aggressive 2-5, and he actually probably doesn't even play 2-5 either. He probably plays higher than that. He has like 800 in front of him. He calls. So there's about $60 in the pot. Okay. Four-handed. So I automatically shout out, you know, well, I guess I didn't thin the field as much as I wanted to or whatever, you know. The dealer laughs. And the flop comes queen of spades, 10 of spades, 4 of diamonds.
Ooh, okay. I thought you were going to say 3 spades because that would have really...
Yeah, that would have sucked.
Blown.
Yeah. Okay, so
well,
it's...
This is a great flop for
it's
you.
It's a great flop. Now, normally, I would think that I'm going to be able to control this hand. But the small blind, the guy who was kind of loose and it was already at the table, it wasn't one of the newcomers, bets 50.
Wow.
Into a $60 pot. Now, the big blind, who came from the other table with 800 in front of him, calls 50. So now there's like 160 in the pot and it gets to me. What would you do?
Wow. 160 in the pot, and you have...
I have about 245. About 250, yeah, 245. Yeah.
I'm shoving at that point.
You're shoving.
Why not?
Yeah, because... And the reason
being...
You've
got two spades on there, and,
right,
you know...
And queen 10.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy taking that 160 right now.
Right.
If I get called, I got the best hand. Absolutely.
Okay, so you're going to shove. I totally agree. My thinking was... I have to re-raise here because if one of them's on a draw and one of them has a smaller set, I'm going to get all of the set, and I don't want the draw to get it for his price. And a re-raise normally would be 150, but since there was another caller for 50, I would think it would be 200. I only have 245, so I'd have to get it all in, right?
Right, right. Okay. Yeah, I mean, you got a big enough pot now with all those draws against players that are some players that are pretty good there. I'm fine putting it in there.
Okay, that's what I did.
You might get somebody to think that you have pocket aces or something, and if they've got two pairs or something, they're going to call you. And you know,
right?
I'm happy with one caller. I don't want the whole table calling though.
So I do exactly what you said. I say all my children and shove it in there.
Now, did you change all the fives for ones so it looked really huge?
No, I didn't do that, but it looked pretty huge anyway. So I just want to speculate as to what you think would accomplish by shoving here. How many people would fold?
I would think that you'd get everybody, but probably that guy that bet into you.
Okay.
Everybody else has got to get out of the way because he made – this was a raised pot pre-flop. He comes out firing at you from the small blind, right?
Yeah, small blind.
And then you re-raise, you know,
big.
Unless everybody else hits some kind of crazy hand. I got to think everybody's getting out of here except for him. I don't think he's going anywhere.
Okay, so I thought the same thing. But we're both wrong. The deal,
really?
The guy on the button calls 245.
How much does he behind? You know,
he had this is a guy with 800, so he had about six. All right. He probably had about 500 to 600 behind now. Probably 500.
All right. And how much did the small blind have behind?
The small blind, after he made his $50 raise, right, had about 190 to 200 left.
Okay. All right. So yeah. So the button probably is on a draw. Doesn't want to get too crazy.
Right. So the button calls 245 cold.
Wow. Wow.
It gets back to the small blind. Who? What? What does he do?
I think he's gonna. Well, he's you got him covered or not?
I got him covered. He only had 200, so I had 245.
I think he's got a call at this point.
Right.
He obviously has a hand. He wouldn't bet into you.
He calls. He calls, and he gets to the big blind, who has 800, and now he's probably got about maybe 750, 700 in front of him. What does he do?
Well, I think he's got a fold, but I'm guessing where his story's going, there's no way he's folding.
He calls.
Four hands out there that like to flop.
He calls me. I'm like, are you kidding me? I have the set of queens. What do these guys have?
I say at this point, now you're like, this is going to suck. Because you know against three opponents, and even though you have the best hand now, there's no way you can hold up. You got to fade two cards against three opponents?
Oh, my God.
This is where I'm sick. This is where I want to go back to playing Limit.
I was so sick. I'm like, I know I have the best hand, but I know I'm going to have to dodge like half the deck to hold up. So he does call. There's almost exactly $1,000 in the pot in a 1-3 game. It ended up being like 986 or something.
We're not in Florida anymore, Toto.
Not in Florida. So... the turn is like the Jack of Diamonds.
Oops.
So I thought to myself, well, only if somebody has like ace.
Yeah, it'd have to be a weird combination.
You know, it'd have to be like there's a queen, so it'd have to be like ace, king of spades, you know, is the hand that, you know, is still in this hand and made a Broadway. So I'm like, okay. I actually felt pretty good about that card. I thought if somebody had jacks, which they wouldn't have, but if they did, they only made a set of jacks, and I'm still ahead. And really, the only hand I can be really, really worried about is ace, king of spades. So I felt pretty good about the jack, but then the big blind bets like 100, and the button calls. Now, the small blind was already all in, but the button calls. So now I'm thinking, all right, I'm positive that one of these guys has a smaller set. Because there's no way they both have draws here. And if one made Broadway, they would have raised, I think.
Yeah.
You know, if one guy bet, if the other guy had Broadway, he would have raised. So one guy's got a set, and the other guy either has a draw still or even another set, like fours and tens. You know, I don't know. So now there's a side pot for like 200. There's a main pot for 1,000. And the river is the seven of hearts. So the spades don't get there, and there's no way somebody has 8-9 here, unless they had 8-9 of spades, and there's no way they saw that kind of heat with 8-9 of spades. So now it goes, the big blind checks, and the button checks. So
excellent.
Before we reveal who wins the hand, can you put these guys on hands now?
Well, it's almost unfair, because I heard people talking about this now, so...
Yeah.
But, you know, if I hadn't heard about it, I would have to assume, as you mentioned, that there's at least one other set you're up against. And I would believe that there is probably a flush draw that missed, because there's no betting on the rim, right?
Right, no betting on the river.
Yeah, so a flush draw missed. And we have one other person in this pot, right?
Right, three people.
Oh, boy. I can't... Oh, that's tough. I can't imagine somebody has... two pair, because if there's two sets, there's already a bunch of cards out. And, I mean, you know, I can't believe somebody with that much money, even if they have 800 behind, is calling with second nut flush draw.
Right.
And you're right, there's no Broadway. So, you know, as sick as it sounds, I'm guessing a third set, maybe? Or maybe an overpair?
Yeah.
But an overpair, gosh, boy, I don't know if I could make that kind of heat with, you know, aces or kings. I would have to think I'm beat.
So, here's what happened. The small blind guy who shoved had ace of spades, nine of spades. So he had the nut flush draw and missed.
Nut flush draw, yeah.
And missed, yep. And the Big Blind had pocket aces.
All right. There's the overpair. Wow, I still can't believe he called all that one.
What I can't believe is he didn't re-raise preflop. If I raise under the gun with queens and gets two callers, how do you not out of position re-raise with aces within the field? He would have lost maybe 100, maybe 200 to me, and that's it if he re-raises, because the tens get out of the way after I re-raise or just call, and the suited ace gets out of the way. So if he makes it like 70 or 80 to go, there's no way the tens and the suited ace call, I don't think.
Yeah, and he's still going to get money. I mean, not at the end of this hand, but pre-flop, you got to think you're still going to get money out of that under the gun, because the under gun's not going to fold unless you were getting cute with, you know, 7-6 or something ridiculous like that.
Right.
You know, you got to think that, I mean, it's a perfect storm for pocket aces pre-flop.
Yeah.
You know, you want to thin the field, but you also want to get paid off on them. So you want to get a heads up and get somebody's stack, and that's perfect, I think. You got it under the gun, and
exactly.
You're the big blind? Oh, my gosh.
Exactly.
That's a crazy call.
So the only hand left to fade is the dealer, and he turns over pocket tens for a set of tens.
Wow.
And I faded everyone and won a $1,000 pot, and there were so many lessons to be learned in that hand, you know, from, you know, out-of-position aces to, you know, betting your hand strongly to protect it to – all kinds of stuff, you know, and it was like you said, the perfect storm. I had to have these guys have their table break, come over with big chips. I had to have a bunch of nits at my table. I had to pick up queens while the two biggest stacks of the table picked up premium pocket pairs. One of them had to flop a set. One of them had to be an over pair and also have a nut flush draw on there too. And I had to fade it all to win the biggest pot really of my life and the biggest pot I've ever seen in a 1-3 game. I've never seen a pot that big in a 1-3 game.
Yeah, especially in Florida. It's almost impossible to get a pot that big.
Yeah. It was insane. Absolutely insane.
Well, I'm surprised that the pocket tens didn't get friskier on the flop, right? He just smooth called,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, smooth called. Yeah, cold call 245. He probably thought, and I don't really disagree with him there, he probably thought the 245 would be enough to get a flush draw out, and then he probably thought that I had aces or kings, which is exactly what I thought.
Well, he could have been worried you had queens, and at that point didn't want to fold, obviously, but didn't want to put more money in your hand. Of course, you're already all in, so it didn't matter at that point, right?
Yeah, but the way it was played, I easily could have had aces, too, and he could have thought, I'm going to get this guy's whole stack by just smooth calling and have trips versus pocket aces.
Right.
But I was convinced the big blind thought I had kings, because obviously he had aces, so he didn't think I had aces, and that's why he called, because he thought I was shoving with kings, because that's how I would play kings, too, in that spot.
Yep.
With all undercards and a flush draw and a straight draw out there. So I was convinced that he thought I had kings and the other guys were on draws, and that's why he came along. But I really thought he should have re-raised pre-flop to get isolated with me.
Wow. Yeah. Man. Well, nice pot there, buddy.
Thanks, pal.
And, you know, I don't get pots like that in 2-4 limit games, so.
And you don't have to give me any swag. I got enough from the pot.
Yeah, I was going to say, you call mom off because I don't want her flaming me on Facebook for not giving you swag.
I'll call off the dogs, don't worry. Well, I want to thank TJ for coming on our cruise and all of our wonderful cruisers who made a real success. And, you know, we even had two dealers who gave up dealing at the Boervaz tournament to come on our cruise and deal for us. So, you know, just a lot of great people got involved, and I'm really happy they were there. And thanks for helping us out, and just another good show.
And hopefully we'll see a lot of people on the next cruise.
Absolutely, and we'll get that information out to them as soon as we can. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
And we'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.